You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, welcome in, everybody, to another edition of Future Brew right here on AmazingBrew.com. I am Vaughn Lozon, and we are back with some more Michigan football recruiting, as we usually discuss here on Future Brew. And with me today, Steven Ostentoski. Sir, how you doing? It's been a rain-filled, cold October day. It finally feels like fall, so how you doing?
Doing all right on one hand. Made my 8-mile run just before the recording of this a little bit wetter and not as fun, but you do go faster when you're not, you know, dying of heat exhaustion and it's not super humid. So there's some good and bad to it, but the dog did not enjoy the first 3 miles. I took her on the first 3 miles. She kept looking at me like, what are we doing out here? And I concur. I don't know what I was doing out there. It was not, wasn't the best time, but hey, man. Got it done. How's your Monday going?
Oh, it's going, man. I have not even come close to 8 miles today. In fact, I have yet to leave my house. It's just been one of those days where I've just been doing a lot of work and not a whole lot else. So hence why we are here and recording this podcast. And let's just get right into it, because we've got some interesting things to discuss here. But we're going to start today's episode with a report from 24/7 Sports' Tom Loy, who runs the Notre Dame site on 24/7. And this report is based around 2022 three-star wide receiver Amorian Walker, who is currently committed to Notre Dame, has been committed to Notre Dame for quite some time now. And he's been a top target, big-time target for Josh Gattis and Michigan in this cycle. They hosted him on an official visit for the Washington game last month, and it sounded like they knocked it out of the park, and talks of a flip began to make its rounds on the interwebs and the boards on all of the websites, as 24/7 rivals, all that stuff. But he has yet to do so, and he still is locked in to Notre Dame. He visited Notre Dame this past weekend for their game against USC, and allegedly, according to this report by Tom Loy, allegedly told the Irish staff that he is going to stick with his commitment to Notre Dame, will not be flipping to Michigan or any other school for that matter. And in the event of that happening, in my opinion, at least, that would be a huge dagger for Michigan, considering that they have been going hard after him for months now. And it also in consideration for my opinion on that of why it'd be such a big deal. One of their other wide receiver commits, and I put commit, quote unquote, you could say, Tayshaun Trent, the three-star in-stater. He visited Louisville this past weekend, and it's looking more and more like he will not be a part of this class, or at the very least, he is certainly looking around and considering other schools like Louisville. So if that happens, Michigan would just have one wide receiver commit in this class, and that would be four-star Tyler Morris. That would certainly not be enough at the wide receiver position in any class, but especially this one. So, Steven, I think there is some legitimate concern here with this report that he won't end up flipping to Michigan, which is what the primary talks have been for what seems like since that official visit to Washington. My reason for that concern, typically if a flip happens, it happens shortly after something like an official visit, something along those lines, to where something happens, to where they're in communication with the coaching staff. They go to the school. They see everything up close. Usually a day or two after that, that's when the flip would happen. A week came and went and there wasn't a flip. And now we're going on more than a month, about a month and a half, and still has not flipped. And it was about a week or two after that, I really started to wonder to myself what the holdup was. And at this point, it just seems like his commitment to Notre Dame still remains pretty strong. So if he does end up sticking to his commitment to Notre Dame, Steven, in my opinion, this is a big deal. Michigan would have to make a move on someone else really quick. So what are your thoughts on how things are shaking out in this recruitment?
Yeah, I'm generally with you when it comes to trying to flip a guy. You need to capitalize on that quick, especially the Washington game, huge, huge atmosphere game. Michigan really obviously put it on Washington, rolled out the red carpet for Morian Walker. So if you're going to flip a guy, that's the scenario you need to do that. As the weeks trail on after that, you know, Michigan's continue to win, and that only helps their case on convincing a guy to flip over, but it's not like Notre Dame has completely fallen off the map either. So those are kind of the things where if it wasn't going to happen after the Washington game and the further on the season goes, you would need to see more of a fallout from Notre Dame for me to feel confident that it would result in a potential flip here. So I'm kind of with you. The longer and longer on this goes, and it seems like both Michigan and Notre Dame will at least put together reasonably good seasons, I don't feel all that confident. It's interesting because Sam Webb had an article on 24/7 saying that he was still very confident. And you mentioned the report from Tom Loy essentially saying, you know, the opposite. So it's hard to say who, you know, who's telling each of those camps different things, because they are conflicting reports over the course of a couple of days. So it's hard to say. I think when it's in this scenario, right, if it were an uncommitted guy, then I think the projection would be this is one that's probably going to go to the end. Since he's already committed to Notre Dame, you're probably looking at 70-30 at this point in favor of him sticking with Notre Dame, and 30 would be the flip. So he did say as a part of that report to Tom Loy, I believe, that he is going to like shut down his recruitment one way or the other relatively soon. He did recently check out Tuscaloosa, for an Alabama game. So that's another thing to consider. But if Michigan isn't able to close on Amorian Walker, which doesn't seem likely at this point, then you do kind of have to ensure that you keep a guy like Tayshaun Trent in your class, because they have a similar build, right? 6'4", around 200, 210 pounds. And you would just be down to Tyler Morris as your lone wide receiver commit of the class. So it is a position in terms of like worry, right? Say you lose both Tayshaun Trent and don't flip Amorian Walker. You can find wide receiver talent out there compared to, you know, like a high flyer defensive tackle or things like that. So I don't think it's the end of the world overall. And I do like some of the young depth on the wide receiver position group for Michigan currently, but losing a guy like Trent, who, you know, I think a lot of people thought was pretty solid at this point. He still does have, you know, there's no crystal balls to say otherwise, but it's not a good look if you start losing multiple wide receivers. Any of those bonds they form together as a part of that class, you kind of have to start over. And in the midst of a season, that's a tough ask. So overall, it would be more like creating work, and they are the bodies, like those 6'4" bodies at wide receiver, that's harder to replace than say like a slot back. So that is something to consider, where you're just not going to find, you know, that stature of a wide receiver with that skill as easily as a smaller sort of jitterbug type. So I'd say I'm pretty concerned. I was pretty high on, based on Maureen Walker's father's discussion on Michigan, I was pretty confident that Michigan was going to flip the switch. But I think this goes to say that, you know, you only know what you know, and behind the scenes there can, you know, different levels of infatuation with a program holds different weight depending on who's giving that. And I think this is a case where maybe Maureen Walker's father, with a lot of the positive things he said, they can be true, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's going to turn into a flip in commitment. I think that just depends on who, from person to person. I think that's the case here, where he's more gives positive feedback on each school rather than just positive feedback on a single school that points towards a flipping commitment. So that's a long way of saying I'm a little concerned with the addition of the Tayshaun Trent Louisville news that I read. And you know, you're creating more work for a staff at a time of year that's really tough to do that.
Yeah, that's needless to say, for sure. Definitely concerned with the Trent stuff along with Maureen Walker. Absolutely. I think it also might be, you bring up the conflicting reports from Sam Webb and Tom Loy, who I would anticipate that their sources are not only within Maureen Walker's family, including Maureen Walker himself, but also with the respective programs that they associate themselves with. Sam Webb obviously being a stellar reporter for Michigan, and Tom Loy being a very good reporter as well with the Notre Dame side of things. They clearly have contacts, sources within those respective programs. And it appears that Sam Webb's sources within the program are saying that they haven't been told differently about what they had been told previously about a potential flip, while Tom Loy's sources within the Notre Dame program are telling him essentially the same thing, just in favor of Notre Dame, saying that, hey, we have no reason to be concerned that he will be flipping at this time. He visited us willingly for this big game against USC this past weekend, and his father and family went along with him, and he's been committed to the Irish for months now. So I think there is some confliction here as far as what the kid is saying and what the family is saying, what the kid's family is saying. I think at this point, if Maureen Walker is telling Sam Webb one thing and Tom Loy the complete other thing, in my mind, it may be either A, it could be a couple different things, and I don't want to speculate too much, but it could be he truly just doesn't have his mind made up yet, and he committed to Notre Dame a little too soon, which has happened before to recruits, and it's not a bad thing coming off like a visit high in committing too early. It happens. I'm not saying that's what happened, but if he committed too early and he's really kind of just evaluating things at this point, that's completely fine. Kids flip-flop all the time, and I totally understand why. So if that's the case, he's telling Sam Webb, oh, we had a great visit to Michigan, you know, we might come here, and then he goes to Notre Dame. Oh, I had a great visit to Notre Dame, we're going to stick it out. It really, to me at least, makes it seem like he hasn't truly made up his mind yet, and he's just giving positive news to whichever reporter is reaching out to him at that time, giving positive news to the program that is reaching out to him at that time. So I think it really boils down to, if it's not that his mind is made up yet, it's something else that is holding him back. And I'm not entirely sure what it is. Like I said, I don't want to speculate too much, but every kid's recruitment is certainly different. And kind of like what you had mentioned, recruiting is a little weird It's very fluid all the time, whether it's a five-star or a guy like a Maureen Walker, who is a three-star. I think he should be higher than that, quite honestly. I think he's very talented, and the speed that he brings at 6'4", like you mentioned, is not something that you can replace quickly. Obviously, they're going after guys like Dane Key, a wide receiver, four-star from the state of Kentucky, but it looks like the University of Kentucky is in the lead there. And you don't really find many quick fixes for a guy like a Maureen Walker if he sticks with that Notre Dame commitment. Now, kind of flipping it back to the Tayshaun Trent thing, I want to talk about that for just another minute, Stephen, because if Walker, even if he does end up flipping to Michigan, the concerns that I have with Trent winding up elsewhere still going to be there. And at this point, they'd still only have two wide receiver commits in 22. They'd have Morris and they would have Walker if he flips. So the position of wide receiver would still be a need moving forward, but they could, I guess, get away with taking just two guys this season, since you would probably anticipate Ronnie Bell will likely be back in Ann Arbor next season. But ideally, seems like they'd want to take three. If I were them, I would want to take three as well. But at the end of the day, if two is all you get in this class, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. I wanted to get your thoughts on all of that as well.
Yeah, I think you're right on Ronnie Bell coming back. I think a lot of us expected Cornelius Johnson to really explode this year. I don't think that's really happened. So in terms of having a at least bigger bodied outside wide receiver, he's still around. Dalen Baldwin would still have another year of eligibility. And then a lot of your other guys, right? Roman Wilson, AJ Henning, and then a couple of young guys as well. And we saw Andre Anthony against Northwestern. We haven't seen Dixon yet, but obviously he would be a guy to start getting some snaps next year. So that's a lot of names that I listed off, and there's probably a name or two as well that I didn't list that could contribute as well. I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody, but that's a lot of returning production. And really there's not a standout wide receiver you're losing. So it becomes a crowded room overall. And I think you're right. Ideally you would take three, because with that crowded of a room, I would expect maybe someone moving on. You know, I don't like to speculate on those things, but it's always possible. I think wide receiver is a position where a red shirt really goes a long way, especially when for a guy like Tayshaun Trent, I think he does fit that mold where you could use a red shirt very easily with him, just with the depth chart, what it would look like in 2022. It would shift the recruiting for 2023 onward if you take like only one or two guys. Then I think that shifts the need for a more immediate impact type player for 2023 for sure, right? Because I think Tyler Morris is a really solid player in the 2022 class, but I don't, looking just at the overall list of commits and again the depth chart for next year, I don't see the need or the guy to really become that immediate true freshman starter. And you could argue that by 2023, there could be a spot for that, right? And you can shoot for the stars then, given you have a little bit more room. So I guess that's kind of like the overall projection. I think if you can hold on to a Tyler Morris and a Tayshaun Trent, I'd feel pretty good about that, given just the positional variability. You know, Walker does have some flexibility on where he play. I think it's for sure wide receiver, but he is listed as an athlete and has some wiggle room on where he can slot in as well. It's not as defined as a Tayshaun Trent or Tyler Morris projection at the next level, but I'm with you. I think two you're fine with. One, you would definitely need to add a second guy to that class. Three feels right, especially with the athleticism of Walker. You just don't say no to that. But yeah, I think if Maureen Walker, if that's looking less and less likely, you kind of got to put a full court press on Tayshaun Trent, do everything you can just to hold on to that, just to kind of keep that together. And again, just make things easier on you to close out the class.
Can I just say something not recruiting related really quick, as when it pertains to the wide receiver position?
Do it.
I think Andrel Anthony's the future number one guy. I really do. I think from the few plays that I've seen out of him this year, he's just got it, man. Like that play that I think it was this past Saturday when they gave him like the end around or whatever it was. And I thought it was going to go for like negative 20, but he ended up turning it upfield somehow and got some yards out of it. And that the deceptive speed out of him, I just really like him as a wide receiver. I think he's going to be a future stud. Yeah. Just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah, that's something too. You saw Dalen Baldwin, he missed a key block down by the goal line that ended up with the fumble from Sainristil. Yeah. That's the name I was forgetting, Sainristil. And that was a play where, you know, that opens the door for a young guy like Andrel Anthony. So
yeah,
I'm with you.
Yeah, you got him and Christian Dixon, obviously the other true freshman who looks like he's probably going to be redshirted as well. He's definitely still got bodies there, but two wide receivers in this class, it wouldn't be the end of the world, but ideally you shoot for three. I think that's what they've been kind of going for this whole time. So, Steven, any other final thoughts before we move on?
Nope, let's keep going.
Okay, well, we are going to take the quickest of breaks, and we are going to talk about another player who it looked like may end up in Michigan's class now, kind of in doubt here. So we'll take a quick break. We'll talk about that on the other side. We'll be right back.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, welcome back to Future Brew. Thanks for sticking around. We talked about Amorian Walker in our first segment. We're going to talk about another prospect with the last name of Walker, and that is Deion Walker. He's the four-star in-state defensive lineman. He visited Ann Arbor this past weekend for the Northwestern game, and while all of that was going on, the 24/7 Sports Kentucky beat reporter ended up putting a crystal ball in for Deion Walker to go to the University of Kentucky. So we've seen this happen before. I think this happened, I want to say earlier this season too. Can't remember if it was Joshua Josephs or somebody, but somebody was on campus and they got crystal balled for somewhere else. Just funny when that stuff kind of happens. But allegedly when the reporter spoke with Walker on Friday evening, he had told him that Kentucky is currently his leader in his recruitment at this point. Back in July, he put out a top five of Michigan, Kentucky, Arizona State, Georgia, and Missouri. So they've certainly been firmly in the mix since then. Steven, I'll just pass it right to you, man. Like, much like Amorian Walker, I think there is reason for concern here. If you are a Michigan fan, he's been very open to the recruiting process this entire time and has been very open about how much he has loved Michigan. But then the Mario Eugenio decommitment went down. He was very close with him, wanted to potentially team up with him at Michigan. And then Eugenio decommitted. And at that point, it kind of seems like Deion Walker started to sour a little bit toward Michigan. Not saying that it's entirely what has gone wrong in this recruitment, but I just got a gut feeling that it has a little something to do with it. So in your opinion, Steven, what do you think's going on here? And do you have any cause of concern in this recruitment like we do with Amorian Walker?
Yeah, I think whenever you have a connection with another commitment, like you said, with Eugenio there, and then they go elsewhere, I think we mentioned that was one of a concern where it's like, what's the communication between the two? Was it a thing of Eugenio just being like, yeah, it's just not a good fit, I'm, you know, looking elsewhere, but really like everyone at the staff? Or was it something else, right? And if it's something else, that usually is a little bit more negative in connotations. And how much of that will resonate with Deion Walker? And you know, what does that relationship between those two players look like? And that requires a lot of speculation. I think add in another fact where Michigan did add a commitment of Kenneth Grant, right? 6'4", 335 pound, three-star out of Maryville, Indiana. And that's a guy, when you look at Deion Walker's size, right? He's 6'6", 350. There is some positional flexibility there. Deion Walker can play either offensive tackle or, you know, at that size, you're going to be a nose tackle. Okay. There's not a whole lot of projection on the defensive side there at that size. So when you add a guy to Michigan's class that has the same size, kind of the same skill set as Kenneth Grant, that almost takes away a position. And it's not really a thing where if you're looking at a three tech or like a linebacker or a safety cornerback, it's really like the position nose tackle where there's not a whole lot of projection elsewhere. Now, it's not completely one-to-one, right? Because Kenneth Grant is for sure a nose tackle and Deion Walker could play offensive tackle. A lot of scouts do like him at that position. But it takes away kind of that that vision for what it looks like at Michigan, right? It takes away kind of one spot that he could have filled into the depth chart immediately. So that's something where what, like, how much does that factor in as well as that relationship with Eugenio? This is one of those rare scenarios where you look at his profile and primary recruiter is both Steve Klingscale and Steve Klingscale, whether you're at Kentucky when his recruitment kind of started. And then as Michigan obviously added Klingscale to their staff, continued on the recruitment there. So yeah, this one's really intriguing to me. I think our kind of like initial worry about Eugenio and any potential communication there could have some negative ramifications for Michigan. I think there's weight to that. Now, the fact that we've only seen one crystal ball move since naming them the leader does give me some pause, right? Because that's a thing where it's like, if he announces a leader, you would expect a lot of Michigan insiders who have their crystal balls on him to go to the Wolverines to be checking their sources as well and saying, yeah, how legit is this? And then probably follow suit, right? That's what I would have expected over the past day since he named Kentucky the leader. We haven't seen that flip in all of the other crystal balls. So that's really the only thing that keeps me, I wouldn't say skeptical, but maybe that this isn't like, you know, the end all be all here. There's still some time until December. It's not like this is, nope, Kentucky's my leader and I'm going to commit next week. This is a thing where there's still going to be some time. And this could also just be a thing where it's kind of a signal to Michigan, like, hey, I need to see a path now with, you know, a guy with Kenneth Grant on the recruitment class here. I need to see a better picture for where I fit in here. So it could be any one of these things, right? And how much weight do each of these hold? That's only something that Deion Walker and people in his camp know, but they're all things to consider. I would say that at this point, I probably still feel like Michigan has a better chance at Walker than, or it's funny because they're both Amorian Walker.
Which
and Deion Walker.
Steven.
I should have just left it there and yeah. Then I could just be right either way. But no, I think Michigan has a better chance with Deion Walker compared to Amorian Walker. Of course, I do feel like that's a little easy to say because Amorian Walker is still committed to Notre Dame. But I don't think I would have said that, 2 or 3 weeks ago. So I still think there's time here, and this isn't a, you know, I'm Kentucky all the way and there's nothing you can do. I think there's just additional work for Michigan to do here. And there's some things to smooth over that I think Michigan can do. But it will be probably the guy to watch the closest over the next couple of weeks to see if there is any ground that Michigan has made up in his recruitment.
Yeah, they've been recruiting him for about 2 calendar years at this point. Now, you bring up the point of guys like Sam Webb and Steve Lorenz and Bryce Maritch, those guys who are actively on the Michigan beat for 24/7, not having changed their crystal balls. Alan Trieu, who's like the 24/7, he's like the Midwest guy. He covers Michigan pretty extensively. I want to say he lives in the state of Michigan, so he's got sources in the state along the high school circuit. He actually chimed in one of these threads on the message board saying that he recently lowered his confidence, and the fact that he told their Kentucky reporter that Kentucky was his leader kind of just reinforces his lowering of his confidence at this point. It wasn't enough for him to flip it entirely, which obviously is good news because he still believes that at the end of the day, Michigan will be the school that ends up getting his letter of intent during the early signing period, which is when he intends to do that. He won't wait until February. He'll do it in the next couple months here. So, yeah, I don't know. There's still reason to be concerned. I mean, he mentions that Kentucky is his number one school right now, his leader within his recruitment. So Michigan certainly does have work to do, but the fact that they had him on campus this weekend, the season that they're having is obviously playing a factor with not only him, but a lot of the other prospects that they're going after in this 22 class, and will have rippling effects moving forward in the 23 and other classes as well. But they're still alive. They're not completely dead. This recruitment isn't over just because he said that Kentucky is his current leader. There's a lot of time left for Michigan to turn the tide here, get them back on board with the Wolverines. And I guess if it is a big reason as far as the Eugenio thing goes, hopefully if they haven't already talked to him about it, hopefully they talk to him about it soon, because a guy at 6'6", 350, you know, you can do a lot with that, whether it's on the offensive or defensive line. Michigan is mainly has been recruiting him to play on the defensive line. Kentucky, on the other hand, kind of sounds like they're open to having him play either spot, kind of a bring it in and figure it out later situation. So they're going to have to act fast on plan B, because there really aren't a ton of other options at this point along the defensive line. Walter Nolan, that's all you really need to know. I'm not going to talk about him at all because the chances of him are very slim. But Isaiah Hastings hasn't really been talked about a ton, but that's another guy that they've been recruiting for a while. And then the most recent one being the JUCO defensive tackle, Jeffrey Mba, from Independence Community College in Kansas. That is certainly a very real option. He'll be visiting for the Ohio State game. So there are a couple other options along the defensive line. If something were to happen to Walker, obviously you don't want anything to happen to Walker, but certainly a good prospect. And they've got other options here, Steven. But at the end of the day, I feel like Walker has been kind of one of those very, very top targets for Michigan throughout this entire recruiting class. They sent him an offer at pretty much the very beginning of 2020. So they've been going after him for quite a while at this point. So if they miss on him, it would certainly be a big loss. But they've got plan B. They've got plan C. They've got other guys kind of on hold at this point. So we'll certainly keep you all posted on what happens here. But I wanted to ask you one more question, Steven, and we'll wrap up, because one thing that I was thinking of earlier as I was kind of preparing for this podcast here is Michigan's approach to recruiting, especially with these top in-state kids like Deion Walker, who they have been recruiting for quite some time now. A school, let's bring up Ohio State, because they do this. Ohio State pushes for kids to commit. And more often than not, they get those kids to commit when they approach it in that sense of, hey, you know, we're not going to have a ton of spots open for you. We need you to commit like right now or tomorrow, or your spot may not be open. So often over the last few cycles, especially, Michigan has kind of swung and missed on guys who they take a little bit more of a conservative approach with, and they get burned for that. Now, on the other hand, it hasn't always completely kicked them in the rear. A recruitment where Michigan's softer approach worked with, you can bring up five-star safety Daxton Hill, where they flipped him back to Michigan from Alabama, because quite honestly, they just kept it real with him throughout the entire process, told him that they wanted him to succeed wherever he went, made him feel comfortable with that approach, and ended up working out in Michigan's favor at the end of the day. But that's one of the very few rare instances where that conservative approach actually worked with a very highly ranked kid. And Dax Hill is kind of a unicorn in that sense. So how do you think they should go about doing this moving forward? Because I think that if they ended up doing something like what Ohio State does with Deion Walker and said, hey, we need you to commit like right now, I think he would have been committed months ago. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that as we wrap up the pod today, Stephen.
I do think there's something to that, where if you push a guy to commit, you'll find some recruits that works with, where it's like, listen, we want you to recruit now. We want to solidify this class. And you know, if there's a time to commit, it's now or never. Not, you know, not in such crude language, but essentially that's kind of the messaging. I don't think you can do that unless you're in Alabama, Ohio State, maybe Georgia. And those are classes year over year that are ranked top three nationally. And the reason I say that, because Michigan hovers around top 10, top 15 in that range each year. There's a big difference between those classes, where Alabama, Ohio State, if they push for one of those on, you know, a four-star, say a top 200 guy, and they don't get that commitment, they can very easily go to another top 200 guy. And that offer holds, I just think, a lot more weight when you're constantly winning championships, constantly in the playoff. I just think there's a different weight to that offer. And because of how quick I think Ohio State figures out who's going to be a player for them and who's not, they have the ability to do that, where if you miss on one of those guys, right, where you push a little bit, they commit, and then it doesn't turn out to be a good fit, right? Because that's something, if you don't have a longer recruitment, you may not be able to judge how well will this player fit in my program. And that, I think that's just an inherent risk of doing that approach. When you're going with that strategy, you're going more strictly based off of this athlete is going to fit my system and we want you number one. And then if not, okay, we'll go to the second guy on this list that we think will fill this slot. I think it's a little bit less of a like human approach. Honestly, I think it's more of a like a business decision. Listen, we have this contract. This contract expires in 2 weeks. Make your decision, right? Kind of a business transaction there. And because, you know, if you're thinking of Ohio State as like a, you know, say they're like Amazon or Google as a, you know, software developer, they're hiring a software developer, they can go and get a super, super talented software developer. They have the, you know, in this case, money, if you're Google or whatever, they have the pedigree to go after that and find that talent that will fill those gaps extremely well, extremely quickly. And you know what? If it doesn't turn out to be a good cultural fit down the line, guess what? We have this, you know, this next class of guys coming next year that will likely be able to fill those gaps. So when you're replacing talent with another top three class year over year, you can make those quicker, more transactional decisions without taking into account like the cultural fit. How are they going to feel? What's the transfer risk on this player? And those are just things that you just don't have time to figure out with that sort of approach. So I think there's a lot of ways that Michigan can approach it, but I think like the more human way is, listen, is this going to be a successful spot for you? Is this going to be a place that you are going to enjoy yourself and enjoy being on this team? Are you going to fit with the current roster? Like, are you a good cultural fit? Are you a good academic fit? So a lot of those things, I think, take more time. And over the course of a recruitment, you figure out more about what that fit looks like. And it gives you time to possibly cool on a recruitment, you know, just saying, hey, this isn't a good fit anymore. We're exploring other options. It gives you more time to answer those questions when you take a more measured approach there. So honestly, I'm obviously biased in which way I think is a better way. I think for the recruit, it benefits them if a program is less pushy, obviously. The more time you have to make your decision. If you know you're the school that is really pushing you allows you to take visits to other schools, that's better for the recruit overall. So honestly, I think it just comes down to, is your approach to recruiting more on a transactional basis of you will come here to be a really high flyer player to me, or is it more, will you be a good fit for this program, this university, this group of people, rather than just a talent aspect? So I think it's a more gray area than what I'm putting it. I don't think Ohio State is, you know, completely going for just robots and trying to ensure that they, you know, they take talent without taking into consideration academics and all of that. I think there's more gray area than what I'm kind of describing here, but I do think there's some truth in that, by Michigan's approach, they're giving more power to the recruit in the recruitment overall. And I think in the long run, you're going to have players that are more willing to stick around for the long run, because you are approaching it more from different facets of, are you a good cultural fit, academics, just program, location, things like that. You're giving the recruit more time to make a more educated decision rather than pushing them to rush into it. So that's kind of my long-winded way of saying that, you know, if Michigan wants to go full football factory, I'll probably change my tune, but I don't think it's going to happen. And overall, I do think it benefits the recruits to give them more power in the recruitment, and being a little bit more laid back and less pushy does give the recruit a little bit more power to make that educated decision.
Yeah, it's certainly a very interesting topic of debate, because there's no right or wrong answer here, honestly. I mean, it's just how the football teams, how the programs, how the coaches end up wanting to approach recruiting kids at the end of the day. I mean, we've seen it with Ohio State and how it's certainly different compared to what Michigan has done since Jim Harbaugh has been back in Ann Arbor since 2015. So yeah, there's no right or wrong way to do it, but I would certainly lean more toward giving the kids that freedom as well. But I think there is an argument to be made that perhaps they shouldn't be as soft on it as they have been. I think lightening up a little bit into, you know, kind of nudging Adam a little bit more often than what they have been, might have maybe led Deion Walker to committing a little earlier, instead of letting his process drag out and seemingly naming Kentucky his current leader of his recruitment. So it certainly is interesting. There's no right or wrong answer by any means, but yeah, I definitely appreciate the conversation, because I think it's certainly something that doesn't get talked about enough, and it's something that should be in consideration for just recruiting moving forward for sure. So yeah, I think that's all we got today. And Steven, I'll turn it back over to you one final time, because as probably none of you know, this is Steven's final actual podcast here with Maize and Brew. He is going on to greater and better things with his career in the Michigan media. And I want to wish him nothing but the best, because he's been an absolute pleasure to work with, and a total stud when it comes to growing the YouTube channel and keeping these podcasts alive, and just all the video and audio content that he has provided, really doing a phenomenal job with everything. So wanted to thank you for everything you've done, Steven, and the floor is yours for one final time.
Yeah, man, it's you know, at a loss of words to start this, just because, you know, it feels like it's been a while, but it really hasn't been too long. And when I was first brought on to this podcast with you, Vaughn, and John as well, you guys ran a great show, and I was, you know, a little nervous about kind of feeling I was going to crash the party, and you guys made me feel extremely welcome. So a lot of gratitude towards both you and John for not only making it a very comfortable and fun show to be a part of, but, you know, doing a lot of the heavy lifting as well. And there's a lot of work behind the scenes. I'm putting together a lot of the talking points, a lot of the names that, you know, I need to do research on, and driving a lot of that discussion takes a lot more work than some people realize. So So yeah, I'm extremely grateful for my time here at Maize and Brew. I'll have a video out thanking people more properly than I can on a podcast. But yeah, Vaughn overall has made my life very easy on this podcast and has helped a lot with kind of bringing me onto the Maize and Brew team. And that's something that I'm extremely grateful for. And, I'll miss moving forward. These sort of relationships and people you form bonds with along the way in this sort of space are, it makes it hard to leave. I'm excited about next opportunity. I'll have announcements on that next week, but for now I'm just going to be, doing a little lap of gratitude because everyone here at Maize and Brew has been nothing but the best to me. And, again, can't thank you enough for the welcoming feeling and really helping me grow, I think, in this space. I think I can point back to the first podcast and point to this one and just the level of comfortability and growth I've had. I think a lot of that is thanks to you. So yeah, this is goodbye for now and hello soon elsewhere. But appreciate everyone who listened and supported the podcast. Nothing but positive things to say about people here at Maize and Brew, Vaughn, and the listeners and community overall. So see you soon. But yeah, man, thanks a lot. No words that I can say will be enough, but I know our paths will cross eventually down the line. I'm pretty confident about that.
Yeah, there's no question about that, man. And I recall the news when Anthony had texted me and said that we got you on board, and I was doing like Tiger Woods fist pumps in my room, like, oh, hell yeah, we got Steven Ossentoski. Oh my God, I can't believe we're bringing him on board. I'm not kidding you. I was so ecstatic that we got you on the team and to do all of the content that you've done over the X amount of time that you've been here. I don't even know. It, like you said, it really doesn't seem like it's been super long. So forgive me for not knowing exactly how long you've been here.
It's like 16 months or so.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, it's been a hot minute, but doesn't really feel like that long. But I just remember when Anthony had messaged me saying that, like, ladies and gentlemen, we got him. And I was like, oh my God, thank you, Jesus Almighty. I was pumped, man. And I'm certainly, I feel the same sentiment for your future opportunity because you absolutely deserve it. And you've been nothing but the best here, man. And, I wish you nothing but the best moving forward. So
thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for all you've done. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in as always. And the podcast will be a little different moving forward without Steven, and John will be back at some point in the near future, probably sometime in December, hoping to get him back, certainly for the early signing period. But I'll have got some interviews lined up, so it won't just be me. So you won't have to listen to my voice, only my voice. You'll have some other ones on here. So stay tuned for all of those interviews that we've got coming up here. I'm very excited for those. But until then, you can follow me on Twitter at @Vaughn_Lozon. And Steven, where are you at, my friend?
At Steven Toski.
Give Maize and Brew a follow and like, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You know where we're at. You go follow us on all of those platforms. 5-star reviews on all our podcasts would certainly be appreciated. And go take a look at the YouTube channel because Steven's face, you will see probably one or two more times before he departs. So enjoy that while it lasts. So for Steven Ossentoski, I'm Vaughn Lozon. Thank you for joining us as always. Go Blue.